Hi, welcome to the first podcast of One Large Popcorn and Two Ices, Please. I am the co-host, John, and...
I'm co-host, Danny Cohan.
And today we're going to be talking about our top five movies going into the summer. We're going to list them, and we're going to review Spider-Man and Baby Driver. And also, we're going to go through a list of our top five movies for Christopher Nolan. So, welcome, and we're going to go right into it.
Yeah, so John... every summer we always watch movies. We've been doing this since we were college roommates at UCSD in 2004. Damn, time flies. It's pretty sad.
It's been a long time.
So in every summer we think about the five movies that we were most looking forward to. For some reason we got into this Tom Cruise movies. I'm not sure why, John.
Well, he's always in the summer blockbusters, and he's always in the weirdest movies.
Yes.
The craziest movies, should I say.
Yeah, we're always looking for the action movies, and Tom Cruise is always in these futuristic alien movies, and those are always the best ones to watch in the theater. So this year we were looking at, always we have a Tom Cruise movie in our top five. So
let's just go into our top five summer movies that we were looking forward to this summer. So let's go with your list.
Yeah, so let's do a combined list. I think we talked about it, and the first thing always is Tom Cruise movies. So we saw a trailer from The Mummy, and the first thing I did was I looked over to John Chen. And
yeah.
We nodded in disagreement.
That was it was on our must-watch list just because it's become a tradition now.
Yeah, so any Tom Cruise movie we have to watch, but that was number one on our list. And then... you can take number two, John Chen. What'd you think?
Wonder Woman. I was looking forward to that. I mean, all the other DC movies, kind of a disappointment, to be honest, so far. But Wonder Woman, I thought the casting of Gal Gadot was probably the best decision for the franchise. So I was looking forward to what they're going to do with that.
Yeah, Israeli Wonder Woman. I like that. As a Jewish person, to see a Jew playing Wonder Woman, it makes me proud. And she's incredibly hot, and she did an awesome job in that. The third movie I was looking at was, I really enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy. To me, the first one, it came out of nowhere. I didn't know anything about it. I'm not a big comic book guy, as you'll find out, but John is.
Yep. And we were definitely looking forward to the sequel. I think there was a lot of anticipation for it.
Yeah, I was definitely looking forward to the second movie coming off the first, just because it was such a surprise to me. It was really entertaining. It was a lot of fun. The music was awesome. And the second one looked like a spectacle. And so that was definitely up there on my list in my top five. What was your number four, John?
Number four was Spider-Man. Mainly because we all got a preview of what the new Spider-Man was going to be like in Civil War, Captain America. And you know what? That movie was pretty awesome, and the way they introduced Spider-Man back into the Marvel Universe was, I don't know, I think a lot of people would agree with me that it was pretty exciting. So if you're a Spider-Man fan, you would definitely be anticipating that movie as well.
Yeah, so I've always been a big Spider-Man fan. I said I never really read the comic books, but one thing that I did get into was Spider-Man because of actually cards. I don't know if you remember, there was cards were a big deal.
Oh yeah, those Marvel cards.
Yeah, there was Marvel cards, and
those are banned.
Definitely not proud of it, but definitely stole a few Marvel cards in my day with my cousins. I think the Statue of Limitations is over now, so I think I can say that freely on the internet for all of history. But we kind of became obsessed with Spider-Man cards and getting all the bad guys, Venom, Lizard, and they're pretty cool cars, like some of them holograph and stuff. And so that made me really get into Spider-Man, and then the cartoon I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
So I definitely enjoyed the first couple movies, and then the third one we won't talk about. It was Abomination, Spider-Man Dancing. But and then Andrew Garfield movies, I didn't think I even watched all of them. There was two of them. The first one I saw, the second one I couldn't last the whole movie.
I didn't even watch either of those two movies.
I was very disappointed. So we were definitely looking forward to this new Spider-Man coming out, just because it looked like it was finally going to be a movie that was mostly closely to the cartoons I watched growing up.
Yeah, like the Spider-Man that would talk to himself and kind of make jokes along the way, have fun. And it was kind of like going back to like Spider-Man's roots, where it was just like a kid kind of discovering his powers again.
Exactly, yeah. So we're going to talk about Spider-Man more a little later in the pod. We're going to review it, and we watched one of the movies that we saw this summer.
Our fifth movie, though, is Dunkirk.
Yeah, so Dunkirk, we are both really excited about. This is the... so this, besides The Mummy, this is the only one that we haven't watched. Now, the reason that... And we're going to watch it either tonight or tomorrow, and then we'll have a review for that in our second podcast. The reason that we didn't watch The Mummy was I'm a big Rotten Tomatoes person. John knows this. I use the Flixster app, and I look at the critics' reviews and the audience reviews, and I got a Mason Dixon line. If it's in the 18-15 range, I can't get myself to give money. I know it's tradition, John, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it for The Mummy.
Sacrilegious. That's all I can say.
Yeah, John was very disappointed, but at some point, there's so many movies out there in the summer, and hard-earned dollars going towards a movie with like a 15% rating that everyone agrees is horrible. I couldn't do it, John.
Sorry. So, silver lining, we did end up watching Wonder Woman that day. So, yeah, it made up for it. Yeah. But, the fact that we didn't watch any Tom Cruise movies this summer is very unusual.
I know. I'm sorry, John. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me one day?
It's going to be a long time. All right, so how about let's go back and review Spider-Man.
All right, well, Spider-Man, I was afraid going into Spider-Man because, you know, although I liked him in the Civil War movie and it had a lot of promise, I was still coming in a little bit on guard because I was afraid of the Spider-Man burnout. I think there's been 6 Spider-Man movies. This was the 6th in like the last 13 years or something like that.
But if you didn't watch the Andrew Garfield ones, then it was,
that's true. You had a break.
I had a break. So for me, it's a little different. But how'd you feel about the casting?
So the casting, they went with the whole, I feel like this was very 2017 in that they went with the whole multicultural cast. And I think it was cool just because it was mixing it up. It was more like this is actually what a high school in New York City would look like, as opposed to when you watch the other movies, it's like all white kids in the high school. So it was more representative of the actual truth of New York in today, like what the people would be look like that went to school there. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like the casting personally. I mean, Tom Holland was a great choice. I mean, he kind of looks like who I think Peter Parker would look like. Kind of like a little kind of scrawny kid who's like...
He's kind of jacked, though, with his shirt off.
But I mean, you know, he still looks like his short face, you know. It looks like that he has that Peter Parker feel, like kind of like that innocent still.
Definitely. He's got that forever youthful-looking face. I don't know, he could be 30, but to me, he always looks like he's 15. And that's perfect for Spider-Man. I think in the movie he said he turned 14 he just turned 15.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter though.
Yeah. but it also gave me kind of he had like a Marty McFly kind of vibe, which I enjoyed. I'm a big Back to the Future Michael J. Fox guy, so
it worked well for the whole high school atmosphere of the entire movie. So the villain was good. I mean, I personally like the performance of the villain, but and even Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, Michael Keaton. I think to have a guy that almost won Best Actor a couple of years ago for Birdman to be in a Spider-Man movie was cool. He did a great job. He didn't just mail it in; like he was a convincing vulture, and he was an entertaining character. And going back to Spider-Man, I think everyone agrees. I don't think one person has not said that Tom Holland's a perfect Spider-Man. Like, it's rare to find someone that everyone agrees this guy's perfect. So they did an amazing job casting him, and I'm sure they're going to make 20 more Spider-Man movies with him. Yeah. Which, it's all good.
I gotta say, though, overall, I was kind of disappointed with the Spider-Man movie as a whole, just because it felt very anticlimactic, and also it was lacking, like, a really good, like, antagonist. Even though, you know, the Vulture was a great villain, I think they kind of missed an opportunity there. I mean, if you're a fan of the comic books, the Vulture was actually part of one of my favorite stories in Spider-Man, where he kind of not only could fly, but he also had the power to absorb someone's youth and temporarily take away someone's youth and become young himself, and the other person would become old. So that storyline was one of the most interesting ones in Spider-Man, because Peter Parker, for a brief moment, he became old and he was faced with his own mortality and dying, and he even had, like, really interesting conversations with his Aunt May, who didn't recognize him as an old man. So, I mean, it was really an interesting storyline there, and maybe they could explore it in the future, but, I mean, I think it was a missed opportunity in terms of, you know, finding out what the Vulture really was in the Spider-Man universe.
Yeah, so when you told me about that, I had no idea that that was part of his character. I don't remember in the cartoons, but I thought that was an awesome concept, and it would definitely be cool to see in the big screen. But I think that would have been more a better, like, bad guy to have in the second or third movie, because I think the first movie is more just a setup.
He didn't die, so they could always bring him back.
That's true, yeah. But I feel
and
like
he would have more to lose in that case. So
yeah, but if he had that power, darker. To like introduce that now, I feel like that's probably too late.
Yeah,
because the backstory, tell me if I'm wrong, but yeah, I mean, I imagine it's totally different, right? About how he was able to get his powers is nothing like the comic books, what the movie showed.
Oh yeah, I mean, the entire movie was based on the premise that the alien technology from the Avengers was still on planet Earth, and they were basically abusing it, and the bad guys were now a problem because they had this alien technology.
Yeah, so I mean, I understand they're trying to tie it into the whole Avengers thing. It worked.
Yeah, like, it worked, but I mean, it felt a little forced, though.
A little forced, yeah. But yeah. Besides that, I think the tie-ins that they had with the Avengers movies to get them more into those Marvel universe for the next Avengers was cool. They did a good job introducing Captain America I thought that was my favorite part of the whole movie, was there's a scene there where they're in the gym and their PE teacher is showing them a video of Captain America.
And it talked about him being possibly a war criminal now. Like, oh yeah, this is a great video, but he's probably a criminal now.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So I have one more gripe about this movie, and it's mainly because Spider-Man was so reliant on technology the whole time.
Right.
I mean, he basically had an Iron Man Spider-Man suit.
Yeah, so that's another thing we want to talk about, was that, speaking of the cool Marvel things that they put in, was I think there was just the right amount of Robert Downey Jr. He was kind of took the role of the Uncle Ben, I guess you would say, because there's no Uncle Ben in this movie.
Yeah.
And so he's more the guy, like,
kind of like the father figure.
Right, passing on the wisdom.
Yeah.
And his scenes in the movie were entertaining, and they were always funny. You got that Robert Downey Jr. charm.
Yeah.
But it was just enough. It wasn't too much of it.
Yeah.
But I agree, as far as I didn't feel like there was a need to go with all the technology on the suit and
yeah, I mean,
speaking
it
of
was kind
of
like yeah,
that's not Spider-Man.
If you want to watch someone play like a video game, it's basically what you're watching when you're watching Peter Parker just like do what the suit says.
Yeah,
so
it was a little too much technology for my liking too, as well.
Yeah, one of the best things about Spider-Man was him like thinking on the moment and kind of doing what was, you know, doing something very heroic that normally people wouldn't think about. And him just being like that average guy that is going out there and doing that is just kind of been always the appeal of Spider-Man to me.
Yeah, it took a lot of the suspense away from me because, like, you just ask the suit, like, oh, what's going on over there? And the suit could tell him, like, all right, so why is this guy so special? He just has this magic suit and you got
yeah. Hit these targets and you will win.
Yeah, but I think my favorite character in the movie was, I think most people would agree, was the fat friend.
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of like the comic book nerd, I would imagine, inserted into the movie. So he was asking all those questions that, like, comic book fans would ask.
Yeah, like, I mean, he was pretty pivotal, because otherwise he would have no one else to talk to.
Right, so he was a funny character, and the guy that played him, I thought he did really
good. He was kind of like Spider-Man's Robin, someone that he could talk to and bounce the ideas off of.
Yeah, but he wanted to be more of the guy on the computer, right? Alfred.
His sidekick. Yeah.
Alfred to his Batman. Does Alfred go on the computer or no?
Yeah, I mean, he's like Batman's computer guy.
Yeah, so...
And overall, doctor, too.
So overall, what would you give the movie 1 out of 10?
I'd say 2.5 out of... What? Out
no,
of 10.
1 out of 10, not 4 stars.
I'd probably say 6.
6. That's lower than I thought you would say.
Yeah.
I give it a solid 7.5,
I would say.
7.5? Yeah. My little brother saw the movie, and he was very disappointed, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I haven't heard that much of. All the reviews have been very positive for this movie.
Yeah, I've been super positive for this movie, so I was a little disappointed, to be honest. I expected more. It just never felt like he was fighting against something. I mean, there was the whole high school drama, there was the villain, but it never seemed like one surpassed the other in terms of what Peter Parker was trying to come up against.
You know what it is? It's because the last movies you didn't watch, so the bar was set so low by Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, maybe.
that like anything Honest, resembling like a decent movie, people were going to get excited about.
Probably.
And so the fact that you skipped those over,
yeah,
I think that helped you. So it's a movie is like anything else, is all about expectations. You come in with the high expectations, like, I'm a little afraid of watching Dunkirk just because my expectations are so ridiculously high right now.
Have you seen Andrew Garfield in Silence?
I did. He did an amazing job.
Yeah. So I thought it was a problem with Andrew Garfield, but no, he's a phenomenal actor.
No, he's a great actor. I mean,
yeah.
Just because like you're an amazing actor doesn't mean you're right for Spider-Man.
That's true.
Right. And I thought meta, yeah, that I thought was interesting was Michael Keaton coming off Birdman playing a Birdman.
I mean, yeah,
that was kind of some Christopher Nolan Inception blow your mind shit right there, right?
I don't know. I want to put up there with Christopher Nolan.
A movie within a movie.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's a good cover of Spider-Man. John, we haven't really talked about this, but are we going to give away some spoilers in the movie? Or is this podcast just going to be like, assuming people have seen this movie? What do you think?
Mary Jane Watson is not who you should.
Oh, you think now you're just anymore. Giving us spoilers, man. Come on.
I mean, I didn't say who it was, but I mean, yeah. You're gonna come away surprised. anyways, we won't say any more about that. But
yeah, we'll work that out. Yeah, because I do want to talk about the dad scene, but I guess we'll talk about that another time.
Another time. do you want to go into our other movie that we saw?
Yeah, so the next movie...
wasn't on our list, but we saw it anyways, because, I mean, the hype for it was amazing, and the reviews were great, so Baby Driver.
Yeah, so again, like, I look at what the reviews are before I go into the movie. That's the big thing for me. So I probably wouldn't watch Spider-Man if it got, like, in the 20s, 30s range on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And Baby Driver was one of those highly acclaimed movies that everyone was like, you gotta watch it. So I made it a point to go watch it with Mr. John Chen. And I was very much satisfied.
I mean, I liked it for the most part, too.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. So the movie...
It's lots got of style.
A lot of style. The music I thought was really cool. So the music plays a central part in the film. The main character, he's got a drum in his ear, so he can't really hear that well. So he wears a cool iPod. I think there's gonna be an iPod Renaissance after this movie.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, he makes the iPod cool again. I didn't know that's possible.
Yeah. So I mean, because of his, because of something that happened to him in his youth, he has a ringing in his ear all the time, and because of that, he tries to drown out the ringing with music. So everything in the movie is going along with interesting music. It kind of moves it along. Like, if you've ever seen, like, Shaun of the Dead, there's a one part in there where, like, killing zombies. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. But they're killing zombies with, like, billiard sticks. And they're killing the zombies to Queen. And, I mean, the fact that it's just moving along with the music and the music's moving the whole scene along, it's probably one of the best scenes in the entire movie. And just imagine that scene for the entire first three quarters of the movie.
Yeah, so you're combining what she talks about, like cool scene with music, with whatever. Who doesn't like cool car chase, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of cool car chases.
So that combined with the transporter. Yeah,
there's a lot of cool car chases in the beginning of the movie. I felt like there could have been one more cool car chase at the end. There wasn't. It kind of smashed it all in the beginning of the movie, the car chases. But it's a cool like throwback to the 90s, I feel like, action movie.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that because it's not those movies we don't really see that much. You know, like a Point Break kind of movies was happened all the time in the 90s, and now it's, I think, superhero movies, like we talked about Spider-Man already, Wonder Woman already. It's pretty much dominates the summer. So it's cool to see a movie like this again. It's cool to see Jamie Foxx and Jon Hamm from Mad Men playing bad guys. I thought they played cool characters. And then I love Kevin Spacey. So to see Kevin Spacey in a good movie was nice because I feel like it's been a while.
That's true.
Yeah. And overall, I thought the main character, what's the guy's name?
I don't know.
Well, he was in Fault of Their Stars. And I think this guy's got a big time future coming up.
Yeah, he was good. Like, I don't know. The whole first half of the movie, it was just like the fact that you've kind of not seen him before and the way like everything was going, like it had you drawn in.
Yeah, I thought he pulled off kind of like the weird kind of guy, but also like could throw on the charm, especially with the scenes with the girl in the diner. And so he kind of had that nice combination, dare I say, Tom Cruise-esque?
No. We'll wait and see about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of good Tom Cruise vibes there, I feel like. You know, good-looking guy. He could play the action well. You know, Tom Cruise loves to drive a car, loves to do the high-speed race.
Yeah, but Tom Cruise does everything, though.
All right. I stepped on John Chen's god. I'm sorry. But I feel there's a little like a young Tom Cruise going on in there, and so we got to talk about the last 20 minutes because that's kind of to me when the car went off the cliff.
Yep, literally actually. But also the entire movie, it didn't really know how to end itself, so it just the last 20-30 minutes, you just kind of didn't know where the movie was going. And even though the movie started out with a lot of steam and a lot of, you know, movement, it kind of lost that momentum going into the end.
Yeah, I feel like the last 20 to 30 minutes got really kind of cartoonish, cheesy. The Jon Hamm became like Terminator, I guess. He was like, well, over the top.
Terminator's villain.
Right, yeah.
Wouldn't exactly. die.
Yeah, and it just... It was already, you know, going on such a good storyline that I feel like it didn't need the last 20 minutes. It became too unrealistic for my taste. A lot of action, but kind of nonsense action.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest part in any movie, right, is finding a good ending. Yeah. And
Amazing start, though.
Yeah, so they went for the big explosive ending, but I feel like this movie didn't really need it.
Yeah,
it could have just had a standard, you know, ending that was similar to the rest of the film.
Yeah, but they could have gone dark with it if they want. Like, you know, they could have killed him if they wanted to.
I
would have been okay with it.
Yeah, I thought that's where it was going. I mean, I know he was doing crime because he had to, but at the same time, I could see him dying. I mean, he put a lot of people's life at risk. One problem I had with the movie was the main love interest, the female actress, he kind of screws her over the whole movie.
Yeah.
I think a guy definitely wrote this movie because, like, she just goes along with whatever he's doing, and if it was reality, the girl would have been locked up in jail.
Accessory to crimes.
Yeah, and I don't know, it kind of felt like this guy was taking advantage of the girl, to me.
Yeah, but you know what? It's the movies, so what can you do?
Yeah, it's a summer movie. It's a good, fun summer popcorn movie. I would definitely recommend it. I would probably give it an 8.5.
Wow.
Out of 10.
That is high.
For summer fun movies, not for like Oscar contender or something like that.
That's true. I'd give it an 8 out of 10 by those same standards.
All right. So those are the two movies that we also saw Wonder Woman. Maybe we'll review that another time. But those were kind of the two movies that we saw most recently that stood out to us.
Exactly.
And now we're going into who right now I would say is my favorite director. I don't think there's anyone else that I look forward more to their movies, and that is Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan. And mainly we're talking about him because we're anticipating Dunkirk. And we thought that, you know, right before watching Dunkirk, we might as well go through his top 5 movies for each of us. So
yeah, so the reason I like Christopher Nolan so much is that I feel like his batting average is higher than any other director.
For sure.
So I've enjoyed all of his movies, and an extraordinary amount of them are some of my favorite movies of all time. And
I mean, he was right out of the gate with Memento, so...
Right, so his first movie, Falls, I haven't seen. I think that was more of like a low budget, you know, straight out of college movie. I heard it's decent for the budget that it had. But then he went with Memento, and that blew everyone's mind. That I think all of his films, what really stand out to me is how inventive they are, how original, unique, mind-bending. And I'm really into like that kind of psychological thriller philosophy.
They always make you think, and yeah, it's always an interesting ride. I've never been disappointed yet. So, right.
And I always love a twist at the end. Like that's something for me. Like that I always sticks with me. Like a Usual Suspects ending, a Sixth Sense ending, and he has that a lot of in his films. So if Christopher Nolan, let's go through. We're gonna rank.
Yeah, so run through the list.
Top 5. So we were like arguing about this on text, and we were just like, well, let's throw it on the pod.
Yep. So you go first.
Okay. So I'm gonna start with my number 5 ranked best Christopher Nolan movie, and for that I'm gonna go with a movie that many people are not. Like, I think people were very disappointed because, like I said before, it's all about expectations. And so my number 5 movie was Interstellar. Interstellar, when it came out, the expectations were huge. Matthew McConaughey was in the middle of his McConaissance, big time, coming off an Oscar. And the expectations were huge because I think that was after, was it Dark Knight, Inception? One of his really good movies. But anyways, that film and the special effects, the I think people's expectations were so high that it disappointed a lot of them. But for me, it still stands firmly in the top 5. I think the movie had a lot of heart. Those scenes where he's talking to an old McConaughey's talking to an older version of his daughter, and those are some heart wrenching scenes. And then it had a lot of the Christopher Nolan staples of mind-bending, time travel-ish kind of stuff.
Honestly, this is a very interesting movie overall, and I placed it higher as 4 on my list.
There you go. Hey, John, you ruined it. So what's your number 5?
My number 5, you're going to disagree with me on this, because I know you love this movie. It would be The Prestige.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Talk about underrated movies.
Right, I mean, it's still up there for me, but it's just, I really liked Interstellar in terms of, like, all the science that it brought into it, and, you know, how it was still able to find, like, a lot of interesting ideas amongst all these science theories that are out there right now. So, I don't know. If you can build a story around that and make something that no one's seen before, I think that's amazing. So it's 4 for me. And Prestige, amazing movie also, but it's 5 for me.
All right, so let me hear more of your thoughts on Prestige, because you're going to see that's much higher on my list.
I know. How about this? We'll go into the Prestige later, because I'm pretty sure you'll have more to say about it.
Yeah.
Let's go with your number...
Number 4. So my number 4 was his big breakthrough, and that's Memento. Memento, I think the first time I watched it, I feel like it might have been in high school in a psychology class. We both went to Agoura High School together.
Yeah.
Mr. Stiano, I believe. And I didn't really understand what the hell was going on. I thought it was really cool, but I was kind of confused, because there's never been a movie like this ever.
Ahead of its time, for sure.
Way ahead of its time. And I knew it was awesome, but I didn't grasp 100% of it. So it was one of those that you go home, you go to your local Blockbuster, you pay $5, you have your movie for a week, we're old, it's a long time ago, and you watch it over and over, because that's one of those movies that I feel like all his movies, they are better on multiple viewings.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of the protagonist, you don't know if the main character, what he's telling you, is true or false, or you just don't know
what's going on.
Yeah. and
the fact that he was able to weave that into a coherent story at the end is amazing.
And just the way it was edited, the way it was shot, and Guy Pearce's performance was awesome. You would think that after I watched that movie, that this guy's gonna be a huge star.
Yeah.
And he kind of fell off after. He didn't really live up to that movie. But his performance in that movie was awesome. And it falls to me, it gives more respect just because that's his first big movie. So I put it above Interstellar. And
for me, it's my 3rd.
All right. So what's your thoughts on it?
I mean, I basically, like, I still remember, like, the feelings that I had when I first watched it. So, you know, I was just so blown away by, you know, I've never seen any director kind of put out this kind of movie before. So... just, like, I remember the experience of, like, you know, him running through the parking lot. He's like, wait, what the hell am I doing? And just, like... yeah,
it's good, some good comedy in it.
Yeah. And, you know, it was, like, a fun ride. And I just remember, like, never experiencing anything like that before. You know, like, kind of like one of those interesting movie experiences that you just don't forget. Like, when I watched Jurassic Park for the first time, for example. You know, I'll always remember that first experience. So, for me... you know, it was like a very special moment. It's the first time I experienced the Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, it was like a puzzle. It was like, so Jurassic Park just blows your mind because, holy shit, there's dinosaurs and they actually look somewhat real.
Yeah.
Like, the CGI was like way ahead of its time. And it, for us, I mean, being in fifth grade, seeing it, it was some scary shit. So that blew your mind. But this movie blew your mind as far as it was like, trying to figure out what the fuck was going on. Like, it was kind of a whole puzzle, and it all came together at the end, so that was cool. My number 3 movie is, I think a lot of people would say it's their number 1. It's a movie that totally changed the superhero movie that we see today. We're seeing just bombarding the industry today. It kind of flipped that whole superhero movie from, oh, fun kids popcorn movie to kind of dark, kind of really cool, coolly shot, poorly imitated by Batman and Superman and the Warner Brothers are doing now.
Yeah, but terrible.
Yeah, because you need a master like Christopher Nolan at the helm, and that's his classic, The Dark Knight.
So what number is that for
that's
you?
For me, that's number 3. All
right.
And what puts that above all the other Batman, because all 3 of them are excellent movies. For me, it would go Dark Knight, Batman Begins, and then Dark Knight Rises, 3rd. The Dark Knight is number 1 just because, John, you know, who stands out in that movie more than any other actor? I think in our generation, role...
Heath Ledger?
His acting performance as the Joker goes up way above any other acting performance in any superhero movie.
I agree.
Yeah, that character just... carries the
movie.
Stole the show. from the opening scene, the whole bank robbery, which is awesome.
To have a character to rival the presence of Batman is difficult. For him to deliver like that is amazing.
Yeah, it's always the hardest thing is that, like we talked about with Spider-Man and Vulture, it's hard for the bad guy to live up to the main character and feel like he's a real threat and feel like, holy shit, our hero might not live, right? And that's why the second Spider-Man was the best one, because Dr. Octopus was actually a really cool bad guy. And this, for Christopher Nolan, his three Batmans, I would put Dark Knight, and I think most people would agree, is his best Batman because of the Heath Ledger performance. And from start to finish, it's an awesome movie. You got Two-Face in there. It is one of those film experiences that, for me, I remember where I was when I saw it. And then, of course, Heath Ledger dying just took it to another level as well. So that's my number three Christopher Nolan movie.
It'd be my number one, Dark Knight. Mainly because it was a movie that didn't have his classic twists, but at the same time, it was amazing. It brought new ideas forward about Batman and, you know, Joker. I mean, there have been a lot of Batman movies out there, and for him to still, like, play around with the entire franchise and make it so interesting at the same time is amazing. You know, like, they really brought forward Joker as basically Batman's psychological opposite, and just always being like, in terms of Batman, you know, his polar opposite, just constantly challenging him, being like, whereas Batman is the master of order and decision making, whereas the Joker is just pure chaos.
Yeah, and Heath Ledger played that perfectly. So what do you have as your number three?
I mean, my number three was Memento, and my number two would be Inception.
Inception. All right. So Inception, for me, it was the hardest decision I had in this list, was looking at my number five. Is it going to be Batman Begins, which I feel like has become underrated. That's an awesome movie with, I really enjoyed all the Liam Neeson scenes in that movie. And that was the kind of the one that changed the whole superhero movie industry. So that was hard to leave off the list, but I had to give Interstellar its due. Inception, the other second hardest decision for me was between number one, Inception, or Prestige, because those are my two all-time favorite movies. Inception was, we talked about movies blowing your mind. Out of all of his movies, I think this movie blew my mind the most, was Inception.
Yeah, it was an amazing movie.
Yeah, so Leonardo DiCaprio, I think, is the best actor from our generation. He's been the most acclaimed. So you're taking the two guys that, the one director that he has the highest batting average, that makes the consistently really good movies, and you never really see a downer from him. And then that one actor who does the same. His movies are consistently really, really good, and you rarely see a dud from him. So combining those two forces into a totally original story that was unlike anything that I've seen before and since. It kind of going into dreams, which is something that I've always been fascinated with, is, you know, how dreams work, why we have dreams, and using that as like a heist, making it into kind of heist-like movie, was just Christopher Nolan genius at its best. And then the visuals is something that we haven't really talked about. When you look at Interstellar, you look at Inception, these are movies that not only are the scripts incredible, the stories, the
imagery is just very thought-provoking,
right? But the visuals that you see, you got to see these movies in IMAX, because the special effects and the buildings going over each other, it was just like
phenomenal.
It's things that you don't see normally in the theater. So what's your thoughts on Inception?
Honestly, I agree with you. Like, the concept that it was based on was very interesting. I mean, obviously we all think about our dreams, but I mean, he just took it to the next level like he always does. Just introducing new ways to think about it. And like, a lot of the ideas in there are like, you think about it from like a philosophical or psychological standpoint, and then you think, yeah, maybe that could be possible.
Yeah, and what I love is how he ended the movie. A lot of people are frustrated by like an Inception because, you know, it maybe doesn't make total sense because it's hard when you're dealing with such ambitious abstract concepts, which I give him Christopher Nolan, a lot of credit for. It's something that people were like, oh, Interstellar, it's too crazy, it doesn't really make that much sense. Same thing with Inception, but he's going for it. He's really ambitious. He's going for the big ideas. Of course, it's not going to be work perfectly because these are things that like there's no definitive answers to. There's no perfect way to make it. But how many directors are willing to like go make these stories, ambitious stories, and deliver to the screen in high budget? And Inception, what I love the way that he ended it. I think this frustrates some people because people want closure. They want the definitive answer. But I've always enjoyed endings where I think you saw it in another Leonardo DiCaprio movie that came out that year with Martin Scorsese, where he goes into jail. What is that called? Where he's he's a mental patient, and you know what I'm talking about. We'll look it up. But
I don't remember.
Yeah, so that actually came out the same year. But it has that ending where it is up to the audience to decide, okay, is this what happened or is this what happened? There's no definitive answer in the movie. So when he's rolling his totem at the end of the movie, you never actually see if it goes down or not. It wobbles.
Yeah. It's a very elegant way to end it.
Yeah, it was a way where it's up to the audience to decide if that was a dream or if that was reality.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. That's
whether he really got what he wanted or not at the end.
Right. And that's something that Sopranos ended the same way. It ended with a blank screen, so the audience had to decide, well, did Tony Soprano live or did he die? And that makes a lot of people angry, but for me, I think it's cool because that what is movies, what is any TV show, is up to our interpretation.
It's true. And
those are, I think, the great artists highlight.
And
that.
I mean, if anything, it fits perfectly for that movie because our dreams are just all up for our own interpretation, whether we decide it's like something that we want to carry with us or not. Like, exactly. Some people really believe their dreams, so.
Yeah, so whether they have meaning or not, no one really knows still. So that movie played into that.
But I think there's very few directors out there today that could have done that could have looked at that same script and made a film that is, you know.
Or could write a script like that.
That could write a script like that, too. I mean,
yeah,
very few directors could carry out and create a film that carries along the storyline so beautifully, you know.
Yeah, so it was my close number two or number one for me. I think in the end I put that number one just because it was such a spectacle on the screen.
And
I think that's what
number two for you was The Prestige, right?
Yeah, so The Prestige, I think now it's starting to gain a lot more critical favor. People are starting to go back and look at Christopher Nolan movies and seeing one that slipped under the cracks. And The Prestige was one that it didn't get the huge box office of his other films, later films. But I think it's right up there, if not the best, a close second. It's the movie that I think I've watched the most, rewatched the most times of his. It has all the elements of a classic Christopher Nolan movie. It was actually made off of a novel, so it wasn't totally original, but he put his twist on it, and I think he casted it perfectly. You got Batman in there versus the Wolverine. I mean, who doesn't want that, right?
Yeah.
Two of the great Scott actors that have played superheroes or comic book heroes in a movie together on screen, and they both were excellent acting. It always kept you surprised. You got your Michael Caine appearance like in every one of his movies. So the acting is phenomenal. Scarlett Johansson in the movie, I got nothing wrong with that. And the script, the story, the surprises, I think The Prestige is really underrated. It's a movie that if you haven't seen it, you definitely need to go watch it because it blew my mind. I had one of those that I had to watch again. And I think also it might have not got the same
recognition that it deserved because it came out the same year as another Magic movie, like the same exact timing, which was The Illusionist. And so sometimes when two movies come out that are exactly the same story or they're both about magicians, people are like, eh, whatever. They maybe don't see both of them, or they only see one. But this is one that you should definitely go back and check out if you haven't seen it, because it's right up there as my favorite Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, is it right?
What do you not like about The Prestige?
I like it, but you're hyping it too much.
No,
I think.
No. This is an amazing movie. So let me hear your gripes about Prestige.
I have no gripes about it. I just thought that he had better movies that I personally enjoyed. You know, Inception more, and I enjoyed I actually enjoyed Interstellar probably a little more, even though I put it lower on the list. But yeah.
Are you a magic person?
No, I'm not. I mean, I like magic. I like the entertainment value of it, but yeah.
So what I thought was cool about it was the Batman. What's the actor's name?
Batman? Christian Bale?
Christian Bale. Okay, yeah, Christian Bale. I love his character in that movie. I'm going to give you a little spoiler warning, but the fact that you find out what happens with why he's able to do his trick and how committed this magician was. There was two of them. He had a twin brother. And sorry, that's spoiled for you guys.
I'm shaking my head right now.
Yeah, I might have to edit that part out. So the fact that this one magician was so committed, you have a rivalry story, which I love as a sports fan. I'm a big rivalry guy. And so Hugh Jackman versus Christian Bale rivalry, and it was all about one up in each other, and there was constant twists within the movie where you didn't see coming at all. And the fact that these guys were so committed to beat each other and the lengths that they went to, and then you got some sci-fi in there. You got Tesla
and Nikola Tesla, Nikola Tesla, inventor of the Tesla coil, all that electricity.
Yeah, so you got another rivalry with the Tesla Edison. They hint to that. And it's just really well made, very entertaining movie. I think it's one of those movies that you see on TV. For me, I get sucked in, and you gotta watch the rest of it.
Yeah, it was really interesting conceptually wise, but Danny's overhyping it.
And you know what it is also, I think, is that if it came out and it was like had all this huge hype and it was successful as an Inception was, and then maybe it'd be lower on my list. But there's my nature. I think a lot of people that. I think you find this a lot in the music business, music fans too. They're like, oh, I don't want to like be the number one fan of the most popular generic music that everyone's listening to. I want to find more of an underground, and that's cool. I think maybe it's just me being, I don't know, a prick, but the fact that it's not as like...
He said it, I didn't say anything.
The fact that it's not as like known as the number one Christopher Nolan or a cool movie or everybody knows it, that brings it up on my list.
It makes you feel special. It
makes me feel special. I don't know if I need to feel special, John.
I'm not gonna go into it, but
so what's the rest of it? So my list was
number, go through one more.
Yeah, so my list was number 5 Interstellar, number 4 Memento, number 3 Dark Knight, number 2 Prestige, number 1 Inception.
And the list that actually makes sense is my list, which is Prestige at number 5, Interstellar at 4, Memento at 3, because it was just ahead of its time. Well, all of them are. Inception at 2, and Dark Knight, just because it changed the whole superhero genre. And, yeah. I guess that wraps up our first podcast. And come listen to us again soon, because we are going to be reviewing Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, can't wait. It's going to be sick.
It's going to be very interesting. And it should be a very interesting review as well. So thank you guys so much for listening. This was John and Danny in our first podcast. And we'll be with you guys again soon. Take care.